Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings, which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second part, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now, prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear a radio program about Isla Fisher, an actress who has recently starred in two great Hollywood movies. For the following statements 1 to 7, choose the correct answer A, B, C, or D. There is always only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheets labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 1.
You will hear a radio program about Isla Fisher, an actress who has recently starred in two great Hollywood movies, The Great Gatsby, in which she plays Myrtle, and Now You See Me, a thriller about a gang of bank-robbing illusionists. Isla will be talking about her life and values.
I grew up in Perth, Western Australia, with four brothers. Well, two of them are stepbrothers. So it was quite a male home. They used to tease me for having big ears, and I remember there was a lot of shouting. I was a middle child, which meant that if I didn't eat my dinner quickly enough, it was gone. I'm probably a bit of a tomboy from growing up in that world. But I also became the peacemaker. I was the one making sure that Mom was all right, because the boys were always causing trouble, and making sure the boys were all right. I was the typical middle child, keeping the calm. I went to something like 6 different schools before the age of 12, so I was always the new girl and had to make friends quickly. It was difficult at the start, when I was about 7 or 8, because I was very bookish. I literally sat in the corner reading books with no friends. So later on, I learned to be funny, and in this way, I wanted to attract my classmates' attention. I always wanted to be an actress. I remember when I was about 8 seeing my mum in an amateur dramatic production of Twelfth Night. We used to stay and watch her sing and wear these fancy costumes. I got my first commercial at the age of 12, for the lottery. I was so excited. I was 18 when they offered me the role of Shannon in the then-popular Australian soap opera, Home and Away. It was a wonderful experience, but the hours were long. I signed a 3-year contract, but I remember thinking after a year, I can't do this. The storylines came in at such speed. She had some medical problems, she was dating somebody. It was a great training ground, and I learned so much. But after 3 years, I'd had enough, and I decided to go and study at a clown school in Paris. It's like a theater school, but you basically learn clowning. It sounded so exciting and different. I knew coming from something like Home and Away that I was going to need to change people's impressions of me. When I finally got a part in a Hollywood movie, I wasn't in Hollywood at all, but in London. I was having almost no luck as an actor, except for a couple of jobs. I was doing some commercials and I did some musical theater. I was basically just trying to make ends meet. Then, I auditioned for 2 American movies in London. One was Scooby-Doo. The other was this movie called Kangaroo Jack. And I was offered both. I went from not even getting a line in a well-known soap opera to winning a part in these big movies. My parents taught me to be independent. They were very much, decide for yourself, think for yourself, and be individual. Don't follow the pack. Have fun, and look for fun, which I've always done. Be kind and loving to others, and I pride myself on trying to be a good friend. With my husband and children, we divide our time between London and L.A. The secrets to surviving L.A. are the secrets to surviving anywhere. Get a good group of friends and get some rituals. Go to a spinning class, whatever. Find a community, as it can be very isolating here. I've got a mix of friends in L.A. Some friends I've made since I came here, but they're mostly from before. I have an open house policy, and a lot of my friends who don't have access to childcare drop their kids with me. You'll often find me in the playroom surrounded. We have a lot of barbecues, too. It's a myth you can have it all. You can't. But, more importantly, I don't think you should want to.
Now listen again.
You will hear a radio program about Isla Fisher, an actress who has recently starred in 2 great Hollywood movies, The Great Gatsby, in which she plays Myrtle, and Now You See Me, a thriller about a gang of bank-robbing illusionists. Isla will be talking about her life and values.
I grew up in Perth, Western Australia, with 4 brothers. Well, 2 of them are stepbrothers, so it was quite a male home. They used to tease me for having big ears, and I remember there was a lot of shouting. I was a middle child, which meant that if I didn't eat my dinner quickly enough, it was gone. I'm probably a bit of a tomboy from growing up in that world. But I also became the peacemaker. I was the one making sure that Mum was all right, because the boys were always causing trouble, and making sure the boys were all right. I was the typical middle child, keeping the calm. I went to something like 6 different schools before the age of 12, so I was always the new girl and had to make friends quickly. It was difficult at the start, when I was about 7 or 8, because I was very bookish. I literally sat in the corner reading books with no friends. So later on, I learned to be funny, and in this way, I wanted to attract my classmates' attention. I always wanted to be an actress. I remember when I was about 8 seeing my mum in an amateur dramatic production of Twelfth Night. We used to stay and watch her sing and wear these fancy costumes. I got my first commercial at the age of 12, for the lottery. I was so excited. I was 18 when they offered me the role of Shannon in the then-popular Australian soap opera, Home and Away. It was a wonderful experience, but the hours were long. I signed a 3-year contract, but I remember thinking after a year, I can't do this. The storylines came in at such speed. She had some medical problems, she was dating somebody. It was a great training ground, and I learned so much. But after 3 years, I'd had enough. And I decided to go and study at a clown school in Paris. It's like a theater school, but you basically learn clowning. It sounded so exciting and different. I knew coming from something like Home and Away that I was going to need to change people's impressions of me. When I finally got a part in a Hollywood movie, I wasn't in Hollywood at all, but in London. I was having almost no luck as an actor, except for a couple of jobs. I was doing some commercials and I did some musical theater. I was basically just trying to make ends meet. Then, I auditioned for two American movies in London. One was Scooby-Doo. The other was this movie called Kangaroo Jack. And I was offered both. I went from not even getting a line in a well-known soap opera to winning a part in these big movies. My parents taught me to be independent. They were very much, decide for yourself, think for yourself, and be individual. Don't follow the pack. Have fun, and look for fun, which I've always done. Be kind and loving to others, and I pride myself on trying to be a good friend. With my husband and children, we divide our time between London and LA. The secrets to surviving LA are the secrets to surviving anywhere. Get a good group of friends and get some rituals. Go to a spinning class, whatever. Find a community, as it can be very isolating here. I've got a mix of friends in LA. Some friends I've made since I came here, but they're mostly from before. I have an open house policy, and a lot of my friends who don't have access to childcare drop their kids with me. You'll often find me in the playroom surrounded. We have a lot of barbecues, too. It's a myth you can have it all. You can't. But, more importantly, I don't think you should want to.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. You will hear Rebecca Teer talking about her favourite sport, indoor climbing. For questions 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part two.
You will hear a radio program in which Rebecca Teer talks about her favorite sport, indoor climbing.
What is indoor climbing? The definition of this sport is quite simple. Participants scale a wall by grabbing onto strategically placed holds. It offers the physical benefits of rock climbing when outside access isn't practical. So let's talk about my personal experience. Why did I try this sport? I have my son Patty to thank for my passion for climbing. He has mild special needs, and his therapist suggested I take him to a climbing wall to improve his upper body strength. During our first session, after an hour of watching Patty as he fearlessly climbed 10 feet, his instructor invited me to join them. He asked me to support my 6-year-old son by keeping the tension in his support rope. Then, he said, you should try climbing too. There were very few women at the wall, and certainly nobody my age. The majority of climbers were well-built men. But the instructor was so encouraging that I booked a session. And I started liking it. Later on, I also discovered that lots of women did climb. It's just that the crowd varies depending on the time of day. Well, the question is whether this sport changed me physically. I have always been quite fit, but my upper body strength and flexibility have improved hugely. So, it's about the muscles in the upper part of the body that have become much stronger. Climbing has also given me a lot of body confidence. I'm now more interested in what my body can do for me than in what it looks like. What has this sport taught me? When you find something at my age in life that motivates, it gives you a real spring in your step. Climbing is also mentally restful because it takes total focus. For me, it's a break from the demands of motherhood and a world away from the household with its stereotypes. What qualities do you need for it? You don't need to be especially fit. That will come. But you need to be a little bit brave and unafraid of heights. I try to climb 4 times a week when the children are at school. I've joined a women's climbing coffee morning on Wednesdays. We climb for an hour, then have coffee and catch up. We're on really good terms. At the weekends, I go with my 3 children. It's family bonding time, something we can all enjoy together. Here are my 3 tips how to start and enjoy this sport. First thing, find a women's climbing group. You'll find that there are mostly mothers with children of school age. You will feel only support and fun after you've joined the club. The second thing is to take up Pilates. Climbing requires a lot of core strength, especially as you progress. And last but not least, be prepared to push yourself out of your comfort zone. You have to take risks and get into physical positions where you may not feel comfortable at first if you are to improve at climbing. Don't give up and stick with it.
Now listen again.
You will hear a radio program in which Rebecca Teer talks about her favorite sport, indoor climbing.
What is indoor climbing? The definition of this sport is quite simple. Participants scale a wall by grabbing onto strategically placed holds. It offers the physical benefits of rock climbing when outside access isn't practical. So let's talk about my personal experience. Why did I try this sport? I have my son Patty to thank for my passion for climbing. He has mild special needs, and his therapist suggested I take him to a climbing wall to improve his upper body strength. During our first session, after an hour of watching Patty as he fearlessly climbed 10 feet, his instructor invited me to join them. He asked me to support my 6-year-old son by keeping the tension in his support rope. Then, he said, you should try climbing too. There were very few women at the wall, and certainly nobody my age. The majority of climbers were well-built men. But the instructor was so encouraging that I booked a session. And I started liking it. Later on, I also discovered that lots of women did climb. It's just that the crowd varies depending on the time of day. Well, the question is whether this sport changed me physically. I have always been quite fit, but my upper body strength and flexibility have improved hugely. So, it's about the muscles in the upper part of the body that have become much stronger. Climbing has also given me a lot of body confidence. I'm now more interested in what my body can do for me than in what it looks like. What has this sport taught me? When you find something at my age in life that motivates, it gives you a real spring in your step. Climbing is also mentally restful because it takes total focus. For me, it's a break from the demands of motherhood and a world away from the household with its stereotypes. What qualities do you need for it? You don't need to be especially fit. That will come. But you need to be a little bit brave and unafraid of heights. I try to climb 4 times a week when the children are at school. I've joined a women's climbing coffee morning on Wednesdays. We climb for an hour, then have coffee and catch up. We're on really good terms. At the weekends, I go with my 3 children. It's family bonding time, something we can all enjoy together. Here are my 3 tips how to start and enjoy this sport. First thing, find a women's climbing group. You'll find that there are mostly mothers with children of school age. You will feel only support and fun after you've joined the club. The second thing is to take up Pilates. Climbing requires a lot of core strength, especially as you progress. And last but not least, be prepared to push yourself out of your comfort zone. You have to take risks and get into physical positions where you may not feel comfortable at first, if you are to improve at climbing. Don't give up and stick with it.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. You will hear a radio programme about 6 ways of being happy. Below, you can read the information 14 to 20, which is in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number 1 to 6 next to the number that indicates the information. Be careful. There is one extra summary. Put X next to the number indicating extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part three.
A psychologist dealing with the topic of happiness, Abdul Majid, says the good news is we all have access to happiness at every stage of our lives. Our expert advice should help you start living right now. So listen to six tips from him and other experts that will help you enjoy happiness.
Tip number one. Don't wait until you're in the right mood to do things you enjoy, says Abdul Majid. It works the other way around. Engage yourself first, and the feeling happy will follow from that, not vice versa. Simply, do not hesitate and start doing activities that bring you feelings of happiness. Tip number two. Look for pockets of joy in everyday stuff, rather than anticipating happiness only when you have that grand holiday, says Abdul Majid. Delight in enjoying a chat over coffee with a loved one, hearing your favourite song on the radio, or taking a trip down memory lane. Tip number three. Dr. Richard Carlson, author of Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, advises avoiding weatherproofing your life, where you're always looking for the cracks and flaws of life, or either trying to fix them or at least pointing them out to others. This habit makes you feel bad, embarrasses those you love, and means nothing is ever good enough the way it is. Tip number four. When you feel like your head's somewhere else, sit in a quiet place and tell yourself, I have everything I need at this moment, or everything is in perfect order right now. This simple idea can draw you into the moment. Moreover, optimism is known to be a root cause of overall well-being. Tip number five. Walking for 20 minutes or more, at least once a week, to clear your head of mental chaos, is recommended by Julia Cameron, co-author of The Prosperous Heart, Creating a Life of Enough. A relaxing walk helps reduce stress, enabling us to make better decisions. Tip number six. Spend a few minutes a day listing things that make you feel grateful. Appreciate a smile from your friend or a supportive attitude of your colleague. Numerous studies have found thankfulness is the key to flipping negative moods and making you feel happy about what's sweet in your life right now. Now listen again.
A psychologist dealing with the topic of happiness, Abdul Majid, says the good news is we all have access to happiness at every stage of our lives. Our expert advice should help you start living right now. So listen to six tips from him and other experts that will help you enjoy happiness.
Tip number one. Don't wait until you're in the right mood to do things you enjoy, says Abdul Majid. It works the other way around. Engage yourself first, and the feeling happy will follow from that, not vice versa. Simply, do not hesitate and start doing activities that bring you feelings of happiness. Tip number two. Look for pockets of joy in everyday stuff, rather than anticipating happiness only when you have that grand holiday, says Abdul Majid. Delight in enjoying a chat over coffee with a loved one, hearing your favourite song on the radio, or taking a trip down memory lane. Tip number three. Dr. Richard Carlson, author of Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, advises avoiding weatherproofing your life, where you're always looking for the cracks and flaws of life, or either trying to fix them or at least pointing them out to others. This habit makes you feel bad, embarrasses those you love, and means nothing is ever good enough the way it is. Tip number four. When you feel like your head's somewhere else, sit in a quiet place and tell yourself, I have everything I need at this moment, or everything is in perfect order right now. This simple idea can draw you into the moment. Moreover, optimism is known to be a root cause of overall well-being. Tip number five. Walking for 20 minutes or more, at least once a week, to clear your head of mental chaos, is recommended by Julia Cameron, co-author of The Prosperous Heart, Creating a Life of Enough. A relaxing walk helps reduce stress, enabling us to make better decisions. Tip number 6. Spend a few minutes a day listing things that make you feel grateful. Appreciate a smile from your friend or a supportive attitude of your colleague. Numerous studies have found thankfulness is the key to flipping negative moods and making you feel happy about what's sweet in your life right now. Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.